A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and talking baseball, including 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Hello, this is Ken. With me are Jeff and Adam from Obstructive View. How's life, gentlemen?
Things are great.
Splendid. I'm not $4.5 million in the hole, so I'm happy.
We will definitely talk about that. But yeah, spring training is officially over as of this recording. They're headed to Texas, the Chicago Cubs are. I'm guessing the players that didn't actually play today got a head start, and then the rest are just like, okay, I put in my three innings, time to go. But we are 2 days away from opening day, so we pretty much know the roster. We know who the Cubs did not sign as of today. And yeah, there was a thing that happened that Adam just alluded to that we should probably talk about. So how's that for a plan, gents?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
As the spring gave away to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrow.
So I guess before we talk about the Cubs, we should talk about MLB in general and the big kahuna burger of a media bit is Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter who did some very, very bad things. And the timeline is kind of sketchy, but it sounds like everybody is in consensus that I forgot his last name. I just call him Ipe, but Ipe Mitsuhara, I believe, is the translator for Shohei Ohtani. And apparently he has a gambling problem, which is what the $4.5 million seems to refer to. And I guess there are a lot of plausibility issues with that story, but for the most part, this is what a lot of the lawyers who became baseball bloggers say, is the fact that they released a statement, it essentially binds Shohei Ohtani to some kind of criminal liability if, in fact, it was found that he was the one who bet and he knew stuff. So by putting that out there, he's basically saying, no, I am not guilty. Everything's being investigated through the proper channels, and now I'll shut up.
Was that part of his statement or was that your statement?
That's a paraphrase, but essentially that's what happens, right? The lawyer, if it's under investigation and you're not criminally charged yet, their usual advice is for you to shut the hell up.
Oh, yes. Yes. That makes total sense. If there's anything that I have absorbed from legalese being spoken at large, it's once you start getting questioned, just don't talk.
Yeah, that sounds about right here, too. It's just the amazing thing is just how long it took for the lawyers to get involved in this.
Well, that seems to be kind of the confusing part, right? Is that like how bad is it to just pay the man? Like, it seems like the pendulum has swung all over from the immediate legal response being he's in hot water if he paid this money to an illegal gambler, to, oh, no, it's probably no more than a slap on the wrist and probably a fine, which he's like, yeah, I've already kind of been fined $4.5 million, so whatever. but I think he can cover it, or at least he will be able to in 10 years.
Yeah, so there have been a lot of conspiracy theories, but it seems like, based on the statement and based on the timeline of things that we know and based also on the trust that was apparent between Shohei Ohtani and his former interpreter now, that he's been fired, obviously. But it makes it sound like he was more than just an interpreter. He was a personal assistant, which makes it sound like he had access to financial records. And I think part of the crutch is, like, how do you get access to be able to wire $500,000 chunks of money at a time, when if you're doing that kind of wire, you need some kind of like biometric scan or two-factor authentication or something? Like, you need to be in the room with a banker and press like the yes key with your thumbprint or something. I didn't understand that part. And I think that's what a lot of people are kind of tripped up on.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I mean, that's true for, you know, us. But, you know, I assume the way celebrities handle money is really nothing like the way that we do things. So, you know, I assume I would be surprised if Zuhara was actually the guy who pushed the button as far as that goes. But starting to sound, kind of sound like that he had just kind of told everyone that Ohtani told him to do this, and everyone kind of knows that Ohtani, because Bohani doesn't care about this. So Zuhara was the one who just said, hey, Ohtani told us to do this, so let's do it. It's the only thing I can think of. I mean, which also is kind of a weird way to structure things.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me is not the part about lying to Ohtani to get the money out. Like, I could see, based on that position of trust that he had, that it could have been anything. Like, hey, this is a great investment, or hey, my great aunt needs surgery and it's experimental and it costs $4.5 million, or whatever it is. Like, covering his tracks about where the money's actually going, what it's for, how much it is, stuff like that. I can see that amount of deception going around behind the scenes toward the end of last year. You know, it seemed like all this was happening in the fall, winter. You know, it's kind of been looming there in the background for a while, and not until the investigation into the bookie that things are actually coming out. So that part, like, I could see a million ways where that lie could be told, that deception could take place from within the circle of trust, that Ohtani would be like completely clueless as to what was going on. The thing that doesn't make sense to me is this story of it like coming out in a team meeting, like with everybody around, including the GM, like that level of him saying, yeah, this is what happened, Ohtani. Ohtani told me I could pay off my gambling debt. And like, that's the way I understood it, is that it came out then to Ohtani. Like, that's the story being told. That just doesn't, like, I can't believe someone who'd been hiding something that long would just confess it in front of a group like that. And A, it not to strike anybody as like, what the crap is going on? Dude, get out of here. Like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened, for it to just be like, okay, cool, you know, stand up guy, everybody, like, pick him up. He really needs our support now. You know, that's kind of the vibe that came out of it. And it wasn't until very long into the public end of the process, once people started hearing the story, that they started backtracking and changing what was being said. So that's where the plausibility kind of, man, it really disappears for me. But hey, it's still like, everything's out there. It should come out pretty plainly, and we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens. But it does anybody else also kind of think, like, did his interpreter tell him that there were no other offers except from the Dodgers? Like, what other aspects of his professional career has been affected by this crap?
I mean, for one thing, like, I was kind of thinking that too. And I remember where I was just kind of thinking a lot of this, but someone pointed out that, you know, like, having a gambling addiction is not exactly a rational thing. So, you know, maybe trying to assign rational behavior to some of this isn't necessarily the right thing to do here. It would be crazy for him to think that, you know, he could get away with this eventually after this came out, but maybe he just kind of hoped it would anyway, or maybe he's just taking the fall now that he knows that it's out. I don't know. I still think the most likely story, and the now I'm kind of 50-50 on, is that, like, he had gambling debt and Ohtani just paid it off, and neither of them realized that you know, this was illegal. And Ohtani didn't really think about it that hard. You know, I think that the whatever, if it is a story or not, but the current narrative about Ipe deceiving him about whatever, you know, either if Otani knew about the money and didn't know where it was going, or if it was less money than he thought, or something along those lines. I mean, I think that's plausible enough to hold water, at least from a, you know, legal muddying the water situation. Yeah. I do think it's extremely unlikely, the conspiracy theory that Otani was the one betting. I just don't think that's likely.
That would completely torpedo his career if he did that. Yeah. Like, he would literally get banned from baseball for life because of precedent. So
yeah. Maybe on the E, but just based what little we know about Otani, like it just doesn't seem like he doesn't care about other sports. And of course, the only person we really have, I think it was said that the bets weren't on baseball, was Ipe. So who knows what to trust. That's the other thing I'd be interested in going back and seeing, and whatever the timelines are, is which things were actually coming from Otani and which things were actually things that Mizuhara said was coming from Otani.
Yeah, I think there was a specific order of events that didn't happen. One is, like, he should have been more self-policing. I get that if you're so rich that $4.5 million becomes a rounding error, you might not miss it. Somebody who works for you should. Like, you should have a financial planner, right?
I don't think it was all at once either, right? I mean,
no, it was $500K
over a couple of years. Probably right. Could be two. I don't know.
Yeah. But it was $500K times nine. That adds up. Like, it's like me as a peasant missing $5 in my checking account. Like, I will notice that. 500,000, you definitely notice that, right? So yeah,
Other weird thing too is on the two wires that ESPN did see, like whatever the memo was, said loan, and who knows what the hell that means, if that was some story that he spun or not.
Maybe that just shortened loan shark. It just didn't all show up.
Yeah, they only get four characters to type on.
but the other aspect that is just hard to comprehend is how anyone who works in the gaming trade let someone get that deep in a hole without more than just a casual verbal assurance that, you know, my employer has a lot of money and I'm sure he'll get my back. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, like, I don't know. I mean, it'd be different if it was $4.5 million at once, but I mean, it seems like if you're let's put my illegal bookie hat on. you know, if you had someone who kept making terrible bets and then paying them off and then making more bets, man, that's the dream.
Yeah, I mean, it's money coming my way. I'm not going to complain about it, but still, the thing that he needed to do, though, like, aside from not taking care of his money or having someone paid to keep an eye on his money, he also, I think, when the Dodgers hired the PR person, they bungled, right? They were with Ipe Soria at first, and then they recanted it. And what they really should have done was make absolutely sure they knew what the heck they were doing before they released the initial statement. They should have done the we're investigating this now comment at a later time when we have more info. And well,
I don't think it was the Dodgers. I think it was Otani who hired this crisis PR person who totally screwed the pooch on whatever that was. Yeah. I feel like more people should probably be fired here. And like, I wonder, and that's the other thing too, is, you know, whether Ipe had access to this money or not. I mean, I'm surprised there hasn't been any suggestion that anyone else was. I mean, maybe this is a Hanlon's razor thing, and maybe, you know, don't ascribe to malice what could actually be incompetence, but, you know, maybe someone else was involved too. I don't know. But I feel like he should kind of fire everyone except his lawyers.
Right. Yeah. I will go back to one of my original statements, which is, this is an issue that if I'm not a lawyer, I would say making the bets is illegal, but paying it off sure doesn't seem to be illegal or even that big of a problem. Like, that would be, if we had never had any of these conversations, I would be like, oh, he's in trouble financially, and that's pretty much it. So it's not totally shocking that other people would take that response. But yeah, definitely the steps they took were not very smart. And it's like, their initial statements are responsible for most of the conspiracy theories going around. If the initial statement had been Ohtani out on his own, yeah, I got screwed. I understand a lot of this is bad, but I did not know what was going on at all, and I'm just as shocked as the rest of you. Only you all get the show for free, and I had to pay $4.5 million for it.
Honestly, like we do have to wait for the investigation to come out, and it will come out. Like the feds are involved at this point, right? It's like an illegal gambling ring, so they have to be involved, and it's out of their hands now. MLB is doing its investigation. I guess several months down the line, probably after the season is over, we'll find out something. But these things do take time. So until then, I guess we'll have a lot more conspiracy theory to talk about. This wasn't the way I thought the Dodgers would self-destruct. I expected them to basically do what happened in the second game of the career series where, you know, basically they couldn't pitch anymore and San Diego wiped the floor with them. Those are the kinds of things I like. I don't like seeing the purported face of MLB, even though he seems to be a boring recluse at most times. He shouldn't take the brunt of this if he is, in fact, I guess we'll say not guilty of the crime. But yeah, hopefully this works out for them and we get to see, you know, basically the best player in baseball continue to do his thing while the Dodgers lose and we laugh at them.
Yeah, definitely bad mojo start for the preeminent World Series champion.
No, they're going to get bounced in the NLDS. We just don't know which team yet.
Could it be a hero's moment? Could they somehow find a way? Will they rid us of these ghosts of shame?
The roster is pretty much set, guys. I don't think there are any mysteries anymore, so how do you like it? I mean, not that we have a choice, but how do you feel about our opening 26-man?
I feel like we made good choices, as they say on Pitch Perfect. I got no complaints. I would have complained if Carl Edwards Jr. had made the roster, but he didn't. So
I'm still struggling with the fact that both Madrigal and his stunt double, Master Boney, are both on the team. But you know, I guess going with that slap hitting versatility and strong defense, and obviously having Madrigal my idol not start the season on the IL. Boy, it's thrilling. And Wisdom still hanging on. Like, hey, I'm on the IL. You can't get rid of me yet. It's pretty entertaining. I think it's going to be a wild ride. I think they're going to be playing as many roster maneuver games as the MLB's revised rule book allows.
Yeah, for sure. I think the rotation is pretty set. It was nice to know that you had a couple starters to fill in the back end. There are a couple starters in, say, Ben Brown, for example, or Cade Horton that could come out later in the year. And having essentially, I think it's like a 9-deep starting rotation, including Hayden Wesneski, who hopefully remembers how to throw it good enough to get lefties out. He's starting in Iowa, but, you know, you got your starting five. You got, opening day starter is Justin Steele. Then it'll be like Hendricks and Wicks. And I believe Imanaga is starting in against the Rockies at home, which is really cool for him. And then you got Asad filling in for Tyone before Tyone comes back sometime mid-April. And I think the really cool thing is if you look at the rest of the NL Central, they got like they're walking MASH units, but the Cubs essentially have a starter who's out of the rotation for maybe one or two starts. You got a guy on the IL and Patrick Wisdom who probably doesn't need that much time to come back in case like they decide Garrett Cooper sucks and it needs to be swapped out. So it's kind of nice, knock on wood, that we haven't suffered anything catastrophic yet. But, you know, the season hasn't started. So once that starts, like our fears will be revitalized, I guess. But based on what we have on the roster, I don't think there's anything I can really complain about, you know. And again, a lot of it is out of our control anyway. So my default position is I hope everybody does well, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, they remain a very Ian Happ team to me. They seem kind of good. Am like I afraid to face them? No, but
a team full of like 2 to 3 war guys.
Yeah, which isn't, you know, a catastrophic way to approach the season, because it probably goes a little deeper than the starting nine, you know, that overall concept. But it's not like it gets your heart pumping. Although at least like the defensive core is in place and healthy, where it wasn't last year. And Seiya, he kept going through spring training the same way he ended last year. I'm pretty excited about what he's bringing into this season. Probably way too excited, but I don't care. I'm very much looking forward to see what he does this year.
Yeah, and Morel was playing third base. More often than not, he was serviceable. So I think there's a lot of excitement about that, too. Like, we finally have somebody who might at least become at third base, even if he's not Nolan Arenado. This is very nice.
Yeah, they could just give him whatever magic they gave Nick Madrigal last year to make him a competent third baseman, and then I'll be happy.
If you could have Morel's arm and Madrigal's aim and footwork, holy crap. And he is not aiming the ball over to first. He is unleashing the cannon every time he throws, and it is something to watch.
And a lot of the throws are actually making it to the first baseman, which is nice. So if he can get to the ball, his glove work is good enough that I think it's all just a matter of transferring to his throwing hand and not throwing it like Matt Garza style into the seats. So if he can do that most of the time, I think we'll be very happy. And he's still like hitting the snot out of the ball when he does make contact. So I've noticed that, you know, he gets into a lot of deep counts. He still swings and misses, but who doesn't these days, right? So it's something to be hopeful about, in my opinion. You know, the council effect is supposed to give us like 5 extra wins. The lineups over the past week or so, it's been pretty apparent like who's leading off and who's batting second. I think it's usually going to be like Hap against righties and Nico versus lefties. And then Seiya is always going to be second. And then the top six is pretty much like a mix and match of those top six hitters in the roster.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to see how Council manages this team. I've seen him pretty much working with, for the most part, the same cast of characters. You know, a slight evolution in the Brewers roster over the years. But this is a brand new set of guys, and it's going to be fun. The one thing we, you know, really haven't seen anything at all in spring training is how he'll manage the bullpen, how he'll handle late game situations. So I'm very much looking forward to see that and either rejoice in its glory or blame him for everything. But either way, not boring.
I'll have to Photoshop the Craig Council meme, maybe just to keep it around for when the Cubs lose. We'll have a picture.
So I was just going to say there's like a Drake meme from, I think, March Madness, where you can see, like, you can put the team's logo on the wall and change the color of his jumpsuit and put, like, a logo of the team on there. So you can actually do that with the Cubs and see what happens. Even though I guess he's a Blue Jays fan because he's from Canada, right? So, but
at least he's a Raptors fan. I assume there's some overlap.
I think he was on the grassy.
Yes.
My God, that was a long time ago. Hey, Skip's here. We can talk about lineups and stuff now.
Hey, guys. Our lineup won tonight.
Nice.
Congrats. Oh, yeah. Yeah, go high school. Especially under the lights.
I'm a big fan of high school.
Yeah.
And not being in it.
Yes, agree. Agree 100%.
It's been a million years for me. But, yeah, I do not actually miss high school. miss some of the people, but not the school itself.
I have to say that high school is way better now that I'm back there in the PA box and not as a student.
Oh, this was your old high school?
No, it's the local high school.
Ah, okay.
You know, 1,000 miles away.
Close enough.
Yeah, we were just discussing how Cray Council would try to set up the lineups. We've already established who's batting first and second. I think for the most part, Bellinger's batting third, Morell's fourth, and then whoever decides to bat fifth or sixth. I think it'll just be one of Dansby, Swanson, or Michael Bush, and then they'll fill it out from there. It seems like Talkman is going to be the de facto DH on days that, you know, Hap is in the field and they're facing a righty, and then they have enough mixed match to figure it out. But I do like the runway that they gave Morell to play third base. That's going to be really cool. I hope it works out.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So you've got Hap leading off and Nico batting second, or the other way around, or is Nico down at the bottom?
I think for the past few games, he's been batting seventh against lefties, against righties, and then he's leading off against lefties. So it depends on the handedness and, I guess, on the matchups.
I also don't know that we're going to see a set batting order. I think he might. I thought I heard him give some indication like he'd play some matchups based on smart people stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, smart people stuff is important. I think you can probably just lock, say, a Suzuki in at spot number two and Bellinger at spot number three for the most part, and then they'll just mix and match around them as needed. He said something, and I might be paraphrasing, but essentially, like, the order is you only care about who's hitting in front of you and who's in the back, because it's kind of a continuum anyway. So just do your thing and everything kind of works itself out.
I think I like to see Michael Bush up a little higher, where he has somebody who's protecting him so that they're not just throwing him crap and they're thinking, okay, I'll pitch to this guy so I don't have to pitch to somebody who's more likely to get a hit. It seems to me like that might help his production early on in the year.
That'll be interesting. I would like to see that too, but mostly I'm just interested to see how it evolves and how it changes. I'm just ready for real 9-inning serious baseball
that counts. I think there's some potential concern about the bullpen in that you know, Drew Smalley's probably okay for short stints, but if he has to go more than one inning, he like seems to get shelled in that second inning. But maybe he'll figure it out, and they'll put him in favorable spots where if they need him to cover multiple innings, at least the damage is at a minimum. The issue, I guess, is Hector Neris. He's the big bullpen signing this year. He's still only got the 1-year contract. I guess it's 1 year plus an option, but literally it's just a 1 year because he's not picking up the option if he's any good, right? There was a velocity issue in the spring. Like, he still getting the strikeouts, but he has no margin for error. And when that happens, like, he misses something, it goes over the fence. That's what we've seen in his last few starts. So I'm wondering, especially since they haven't locked down the official roster, they don't have to until probably the day of, like, before first pitch, before they set the lineups, they have to. But they haven't locked it down, so there's a chance that they could just, like, phantom IL him and try to bring up a different reliever. But for the most part, if he's still getting swing and miss strikeouts, he just has to figure out the other stuff, and then he's still usable. So maybe I'm worrying for nothing, and it's just spring, and he was a veteran working on something.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him at all.
Me neither. I think if they were really worried about him, they would have communicated that better to Carl Edwards Jr., and he would have maybe not opted out of his contract.
More than just a game.
Let's do some predictions for our Cubs. What's your win total this year? We did this the same thing last year. I think Jeff and I might have done 83 together, and Adam went like 92. But this year, the 2024 Cubs, as currently constructed, and you can think of it as like this roster will never change, or we're going to see some additions throughout the year, either from within or without. What's your win total, gentlemen, for the 2024 Cubs?
I'm going to go with 85 wins. And I feel optimistic, just like last year.
I'm going with a first half where they win 40 games, but that they end the season on a roll and win 95 games.
I would enjoy seeing that.
Yeah, it has been known to happen, so I'm not going to clown you or anything, but that would be really cool to see.
Well, I'm glad to see that Adam is in the ballpark of what he predicted last year.
Way better than last year.
Well, wasn't it something like 92, but they still missed the playoffs last year?
Yeah. Yeah. I overestimated the competition and underestimated the Cubs. Go figure.
Well, I'm going to predict 89. I think they're better than a 500 team, and I think some of the youth is going to produce this year.
Yeah, I'm somewhere between 87 and 90 myself. I'm going to go with 87 just to compromise. Jeff's 85 was, I believe, their total when they got to the playoffs again in 2007. So it's been known to happen. The fact that there's an extra wild card now probably makes it easier for them. If they don't win the division, they might snag a wild card. But that also presupposes that nobody else in the West or the East is able to overtake or come anywhere close to competing with the Dodgers and Atlanta, right? Or the Phillies. So it's going to be a little crazy, but I think 87 should get them a playoff spot.
I think 85 will get them a playoff spot. I should clarify in my prediction. I think there'll be 85 wins and a playoff spot, possibly winning the division, because I'm not really high on this division.
Because the Marlins, the Diamondbacks, both had like 84-ish games last year. So they got wild cards. And
yeah, 84 got us in, yeah. Or get them in.
Yeah, like we were at 83 because of the late season swoon. So the cool thing about Council is that he's supposed to know how to rest his pitchers and use his bullpen more wisely. So hopefully that means that they won't wear down so much. But yeah, we'll have to see if he's truly the genius that we all hope he is, or if Milwaukee just had a lot of really good, you know, down the line coaches.
And I'm just gonna fight against the regression bat here, because I'm like, I think this team is better than last year, and I think last year's team was super unlucky, but I'm still not gonna go more than two more wins than last year.
Yeah, I'm just betting on luck, plain and simple. It's what I want to happen, and there's no sense in predicting accurately and disappointingly. So I gotta choose to shoot for the moon.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get hopefully a full season of Seiya looking good. You know, there's maybe the starters won't be constantly injured like they were last year, though I guess Taillon's already injured. But I don't know. I feel a little bit better vibes-wise. Of course, I felt good about last year's team, and I only predicted them to win 80. So.
So let's do a follow-up. Who are your six playoff teams? You can start with the three division winners and then your wild cards. For the NL, we don't care about the AL right now. So if the AL becomes a problem, that means the World Cubs are in the World Series. But if we have time and you guys are interested, we could do AL as well. But yeah, give me your six NL teams, and then, you know, if you feel like it, go AL as well.
Two of them are very easy, Braves and Dodgers. And I already predicted the Cubs would win the NL Central with 85 wins. So past that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the Phillies. Like, they're going with the all DH offense. A lot of people like them, but I'm not really feeling it. I'd go with like the Diamondbacks and the Giants getting wild card spots. And I don't know who I'd pick for the last one. I guess the Phillies could limp in, but I'm not super excited about them.
Yeah, I would say Dodgers, Braves, Padres, Diamondbacks, Cubs, Reds.
Oh, the Reds. Yeah, kind of bullish on them because of their prospects and up-and-comers.
And because cool. I think it's just a weird year, too. The Mets not really going for it, but not really tanking. I wonder if this is going to end up being their best year in forever. But, yeah, I'm still kind of banking on them being a hot mess. So
I'm going Dodgers, Braves, and Cubs to win the divisions. I will go Padres and Diamondbacks for two of the wild cards and Phillies for the last one.
Well, I mean, I hate to be a broken record, but I think, you know, the Dodgers and the Braves might as well, you know, start selling their playoff tickets now, which seems foolish, but clearly they're gonna be there. I was not so bullish on Arizona until they signed Montgomery, apparently today or about to. I think that probably puts them up into the playoffs. I kind of feel like the Cubs are the favorite in the Central. I think despite the DH lineup, as you say, for the Phillies, I think their pitching's still pretty good. So I think the Phillies get in as a wild card. And I wouldn't actually be surprised if they don't really push the Braves. I think they're probably going to be the top wild card. And in my I can't quite follow everybody along, so I think my surprise wild card is going to be Pittsburgh.
Ooh, that's good.
They got some fun players, yeah.
They might be like this year's version of last year's Cubs, where, you know, they're just a fun team that falls short, because I'm not so sure about their pitching, but they do have a lot of really interesting prospects that could take a step forward. So that works. I don't think there's any objection to your picks there.
Yeah, well, a full season of O'Neill Cruz could be really fun if he doesn't get hurt like 8 games into the season again or whatever it was last year.
Right. Well, and Key Brian Hayes seems to be starting to figure it out too, and they do have some pitching. They actually signed a few guys this offseason, not like high-priced guys, but, you know, I definitely don't think they're going to be last like they tend to be, so.
Yeah, with this division, though, it's like every team in it right now has the potential to be first or last, because there's just so much chaos baked into this division. So, yeah, they'll just power through the whole 162. I feel like the Cubs don't play a certain division foe past August or something like that. So because of the rebalance schedule, there's just very little opportunity for them to make up ground head to head. They basically have to make every game count. So it's not just the 13 against each opponent. It's like the other like 80 or so games across, you know, to the American League and the rest of the National League. They have to try to win as many games as possible, which is an obvious thing to say, but. You know, literally, they have to do that because they just don't get as many in division games anymore.
Yeah, but even so, if you can dominate in the weak division, you're still a little bit more weighted toward that. So it's still an advantage, even if it's not the advantage it used to be.
Yeah, there also is with that, you know, you have more games against your division, but I think you also run into kind of what the Cubs ran into with the Diamondbacks, where they played them last year at the worst possible time. It was when the Cubs were maybe not at their worst, but definitely not their best. And the Diamondbacks just couldn't do anything wrong in those stretches. And if you run into the Pirates when they're hot, or the Reds when they're hot, or the Cardinals when Marmol's on sick leave or something, you could really you know, suffer some serious losses if you catch somebody at the wrong time.
Yeah, and the Cubs were just completely out of gas in those D-back series, both the offense and the pitching.
Yeah.
You know, you said a minute ago that you thought any team in the Central could be first or last, and my immediate thought was, I don't think the Cardinals can be first, not because of their players, but because of their manager.
Oh, yeah. He needs a full season sick leave.
Yeah, it might be better then.
Like, remember when La Russa got sick for a while at the end with the White Sox and suddenly they were good again? It was like people didn't hate coming to work. That's like, I do not understand what's going on there with the doubling down on Ollie Marmol, but here he is.
I mean, I don't think that it was a vote of confidence necessarily. Like, I've seen it from some, like, St. Louis fans. They're like, this was just so they're not asking the question every press conference if he's going to be extended or whatever at the end of the season. Because it was his lame duck. It's his lame duck year going this year. Like, when they fired Mike Schilt, they had just extended him, like, 3 months earlier. So it might not mean that much, but it is still funny from a PR perspective.
We're giving you your golden parachute now.
Yeah.
I see.
I mean, they need the business write-off. So, you know, just kind of a deferred severance package in a way. So that's a good point.
It's the Cardinals' way.
Yeah.
I like this one.
Do you guys have AL picks? Like, I can give mine first. I think, you know, it's probably, man, it's hard in the West. I don't actually know who's going to do anything because there was that whole TV rights issue, and I guess they're not all spending that much. Like, even Texas couldn't afford to retain Jordan Montgomery. But I feel like you kind of have to pick Texas to win the division, right? They would be competing heavily with the Astros and maybe Seattle, but the other two teams down below don't matter. So it feels like three of those teams, Texas, Seattle, and Houston will all get playoff spots, and two of them are just going to get wild cards. And then in the Central, I'd say Twins, but I kind of want the Royals to do something. So let's just pick the Royals.
They've got the biggest payroll in the AL Central now.
That's true. And then in the East, I'd like to see probably the Blue Jays and the Orioles come out of it. I don't know who's going to win the division, but I feel like the Orioles probably will. They did win 100 games, and the Blue Jays can take the thing. And then based on that, it would be super cool if it was a Blue Jays Cubs World Series, but I just honestly don't know. I think we can save the World Series predictions for midseason, but, you know, I'm not going to cop out. I'll just say Blue Jays and Cubs. Let's go for it.
I think it's going to be Braves and Astros, two teams I don't care about at all.
That's fair.
And I think the Braves win it going away. I think, you know, as much as Dodgers hype as they got for all their big name signings and stuff, I still think the Braves are the best team in the NL and in baseball. They're just so good.
I think that six AL teams are going to make the playoffs.
Fair.
And yeah, I Padres. Padres are taking it. defying all odds, the Padres beat the White Sox in the World
Series. Wow.
Whoa.
No, the White Sox will not be making they will be.
I think the
Royals? Padres Royals in the World Series. I'll go with that.
Yeah, right. I think the White Sox will be lucky to lose less than 100 games this year.
Oh,
I think on the Effectively Wild podcast predictions today, so we refer to that team as the Vibes Apocalypse.
Yeah, I think they're still trying to, like, either move to Nashville or get that stadium in the 78, which is dumb. I hope they don't get the money and they are stuck where Old Comiskey or whatever it's called now is. Because they just can't move the team away from there. They're just too entrenched. It would be stupid. Reinsdorf should sell. That's all I got to say.
He should seek therapy. That guy, he's in a bad place. Like, when he hired Tony back, like that was a cry for help, and someone should have reached out. He does not have the support system he needs right now, because that dude needs serious one-on-one time to find love, find joy, because what he's doing to that franchise, I thought he liked it. I thought he liked baseball the most, but dear God, it's terrible.
Yeah, a friend of mine here is from Southside Chicago, is a White Sox fan, and well, not really a strong of a White Sox fan, but he always says that no one hates the White Sox more than their own fans.
So Gary, let's see.
Putting them to the test, though.
I mean, he seems to be following the same trajectory that Peter Angelos did, right? Get old, make your team terrible, and then figure out a way to, you know, transfer ownership, and then, you know, move on to the next rite of passage.
Yeah, except you hope that you could do that before the owner moves you to Vegas or whatever.
Yeah, the problem there is John Fisher's just too young.
Yeah, he's a terrible, terrible person and should have nothing but bad things befall him. Feel really bad for Oakland fans still. Yeah. Oh, Skip, you need your AL picks in.
Yeah, yeah.
Champion.
Okay, so AL picks in the East. I think the Blue Jays win the East. I think the Tigers win the Central.
Wow.
I think the AL is kind of all mixed up this year. I think probably Houston wins the AL West. My wild card teams, let's see, I get three, are the Orioles, the Yankees, and the Mariners. Yeah.
You think Texas is going to tank? Wow.
I think Seattle's just going to overcome them. I really like Seattle's young pitching a lot. And they have a couple of good young hitters. So I just kind of feel like they're going to move up. So,
okay.
And, you know, the Yankees have done some things. They got Juan Soto. And so I think, you know, if it weren't the Yankees, I'd pick the Rangers. But I just kind of have a feeling it'll be the Yankees this year. So I felt like the Rangers kind of overperformed last year.
That's fair. I think you're probably one of the very few people to be kind of bullish on the Yankees. Everybody, including Yankees fans, seem underwhelmed. They are not even close to whelmed with the Yankees, even though they do have a lot of talent. That happens to be old-ish now. So,
yeah, I guess I should give the rest of my AL picks since I only picked the AL champ. I think Astros, Twins, Orioles to win the division. Mariners, Yankees, and Blue Jays, wild cards. No Rangers. I think they'll have a World Series hangover.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah, I stand behind my six teams.
That's fair. Okay. And you picked the Padres, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I that would be great because their owner just died and he was spending through the nose and, you know, the fans were actually excited, you know, so it would be kind of a bittersweet moment, but it would be kind of nice to win one for their previous owner who actually seemed to really care about the team doing well, even though they got prellered. But
it's not going to happen, but the funniest playoff outcome would be if the Angels got to the playoffs the first season without Otani.
Yeah. That'd be good for Mike Trout. Mike Trout deserves something nice.
Well, considering the return they got for Otani. Oh, wait.
Wow.
You got a draft pick?
Yeah. Yep.
They traded all their top prospects to try to make the playoffs last year. To bet all their top prospects for like number like 900 or so on the top 100 list.
All right, let's do our rewards. Let's do our awards.
Okay.
Predictions. I'm very excited.
Yeah, Mookie's at shortstop now. I feel like he'd win MVP just for being able to do that and hitting like Mookie usually does. So Mookie is my MVP.
Oh, okay. All right. Good guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Cy Young, that's a good one. I kind of want to give it to Shota Imanaga because he was nasty this spring. He does give the, you know, the fastball, if it's not dotted right, it will go a long way the other way. But he was showing a lot of really cool stuff. I feel like he would be a dark horse to do it. And rookie of the year, probably not a Cub. No, if Shota wins the rookie of the year, Cy Young, then yeah, that would be my rookie of the year. So let's do that. Good call, Mister. I'm down with that. And yeah, let's
get not that I have him in the chamber as my rookie of the year, but
and if that's the case, and he wins Cy Young and rookie of the year, and we pick the Cubs, let's give the manager of the year to Craig Council. So that's my four, big four.
You don't want to give an MVP to the Cubs too while you're at it? Nah, I mean, you might as well make Mookie, it a clean sweep.
Mookie's too good, man. Mookie's cool.
All right. Just checking, you know, giving you the chance there. Yeah. So I think my Cy Young is Aaron Nola.
That's a good pick.
And my rookie of the year is Michael Bush. And
does
my,
he have rookie eligibility anymore? Do you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think he does, but I'm not 100% sure. So assuming he does, he's my rookie of the year. My and that'll make Jed Hoyer look super smart, and then he'll be the executive of the year or whatever that's called. And then let's see, what am I missing? MVP. I mean, as much as of a hard time as I was just giving you a minute ago about Mookie, I think if he has a decent year, then he's easily the MVP. What's that leave? Manager of the year? Cy Young is...
No, you did.
Nola, yeah.
So manager.
Manager of the year. Going with this idea that I think Pittsburgh is going to be the surprise playoff team, then whoever happens to be managing them these days is the manager of the year, even if I don't know his name, but I think it might be Derek Shelton.
I think that sounds right.
Wow. Yeah, I have totally forgotten who manages the Pirates. You don't really think about the Pirates.
Cool. I know it's not Clint Hurdle anymore, which makes me happy.
The human tomato.
Yeah. I'll do mine.
So I was going to go with Mookie, but since everyone seems to be guessing Mookie, I'll go with Acuna. And sticking with the theme for Cy Young, I'll go with the guy who should have won it last year, which was Spencer Strider. So lots of Braves. Rookie of the year, I'll go with Imanaga. And manager, I don't care. So let's pick someone. Let's go with, if the Braves get all the MVPs, Snitker, I guess, if he's still the Braves manager.
Yeah, those are good. Those are good. The correct ones. the Cy Young is going to be Yu Darvish.
Oh.
Ooh, I would enjoy that.
The rookie of the year, Shota. And MVP is going to be from Japan. Mr. Seiya Suzuki is throwing it down this year.
Okay. He is going to flirt
with 400, hit 35 home runs, and have an on-base percentage of 465 in the first week of April. I'm shooting past realism on the actual stats, but I think he's going to blow up, and yeah, I think he's going to win the MVP. That's my prediction. And you can't win two player awards and the division and not have Craig Council be manager of the year. Although I considered saying that Mike Schilt's going to get fired or Ollie Marmol get fired and David Ross will take their place and win manager of the year. Take his team to the playoffs, but yeah,
that would be a big FU right there. That would be crazy,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, one bonus prediction too: better ERA, Shota or Yamamoto?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm gonna be a homer and say Shota.
Yeah, I feel like Shota too.
Yeah. Well, after their first game.
Yeah, long term, I take Yamamoto, but I for this year, I feel good about Shota.
Indeed.
And I would say there's a really good chance that in the National League, the Japanese players take two of the three major awards. I don't know exactly which two they would be, but you know, between Shota and Yamamoto and the center fielder from he's Japanese, right?
He's Korean.
Oh, he's Korean. Okay, well,
Jung-Hoo Lee.
Yes.
And Giants. Yeah, he's Korean.
And he's Korean. Are we assuming that Ohtani can't win an MVP if he's not pitching?
Not as a DH.
If he hits
60 home runs, yes.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting what over the course of a year and, you know, in the ins and outs of Bad Mojo, assuming that they won't just stay in that place all year long, what it's like for him to be hitting in that lineup, what it's going to do. And if is there any chance he plays in the outfield?
There's a chance.
They were exploring it, but I feel like they don't want his arm to get hurt.
Right. Yeah, probably not. Probably not till midseason, right, at least.
Yeah.
There are 450 million reasons why he's not going to play in the outfield.
That's present day value. Good job.
The beauty and the history in this cathedral. The sky so blue against the grass so green. Like time stood still for.
Yeah, I think that's a lot for this episode. We'll probably have to table the Blake Snell signing and the Jordan Montgomery signing and the allegations of collusion and Major League Baseball Players Association getting mad at each other for next time. But it's been fun talking about the Cubs with you gentlemen. And you can find us at obstructedview.net. You can also tweet or X us or whatever. Usually we post in the forum, or maybe it's just me. I've been talking to myself a lot lately. But definitely find us there. Thanks to Rich Deanna for the theme song, Randall Sanders for pulling the final out call. And for the next 2 days, there is no baseball. But once Thursday comes, there will not be a weekend without baseball for a very long time. So baseball, that counts, guys.
Hooray!
Looking forward to it.
You have to see it.
I'm ready for next year.
Okay. But you have to see it.
Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah. And I think they are keeping it, though. They're just not using the bad, very, very bad hashtag anymore. I have seen two things, though. I have definitely seen you have to see it. And I definitely seen seeing as believing with the capital C. So they're like interchanging the two and definitely not using a hashtag.
Yeah, I'm looking at both right now on the Cubs website.
Can we get not even slightly entertaining puns out of our taglines, please?
Oh.
Gee. Oh, that's a good one.
Hey, I just wanted to say, since we're doing predictions and thinking about the trends and the way baseball works, if the Cubs win the division and so they end up in the playoffs and they have one or two players that win major awards, because this is the way it always works, Craig Counsell will not be manager of the year because he's never manager of the year.
Even when they win 96 games, though?
I don't know what it is.
With 96 games, I think he'll get manager of the year.
All those times he should have won manager of the year with the Brewers, and he never did. I say that the writers continue to snub him, and somebody else becomes manager of the year.
Oh. Yeah.
So just to put the pessimistic Cub fan spin on the end of the episode.
Hey, I'll be okay if that's the reason why he doesn't get it.
Yeah, like
I'll take that bullet.
Amen. I don't think it matters if they win the World Series. Like he'll take that trade. We'll see. Just get in, and chaos will reign.
More than just a game.